The motorcycles were parked where they had been when Jesse dropped Anya off before. This time, he got out of his SUV and was careful to take a closer look at the silver skull and crossbones painted on the gas tanks. There was no mistaking it, the Totenkopf. Jesse got out his cell phone and took a few shots of the gas tanks. He texted them to Joey O'Brien. Before he went into the factory building, Jesse needed to be certain the image on these gas tanks matched the one Joey had seen outside the scupper on the day things almost got out of hand with Alicia. Joey got back to him almost immediately with a thumbs-up emoji and the words, "Exactly the same." Before he stepped into a potentially dangerous situation with only his 9mm and no backup, Jesse texted a photo of the building, the photos he'd just sent to O'Brien, and his location to Molly. Beneath the photos, he wrote, "If you don't hear from me in 1 hour, call BPD. Jesse put his phone away and made his way to the door through which Anya had disappeared. He had a tough choice to make. Although he wasn't thrilled about it, he was going to need these people to help. And walking into someone's home or clubhouse with a drawn weapon wasn't usually the way to encourage people's cooperation. On the other hand, he was walking into a potentially hostile situation, and he couldn't be sure that Hank and or Anya were going to be present. Even if they were, there was no guarantee they would stand up for him. But he made the choice to keep his weapon holstered. The door was closed but unlocked, and Jesse was able to pull it back with only mild protest. It led into a long, dimly lit hallway. It smelled faintly of gasoline, exhaust fumes, and motor oil. He took his cell back out of his pocket and, using it as a flashlight, carefully made his way down the hall. There were offices on either side of the hallway, most of them empty. One of the offices at the end of the hallway was clearly in daily use. It contained a desk, chairs, a phone, a computer, and posters on the walls. Most of the posters were of customized motorcycles or suggestively clad and positioned women. Many featured both. Along with those posters, there was an enlarged framed photo of the Totenkopf. Jesse stepped into the office and looked at the paperwork on the desk. No racist manifestos, but supplier invoices for motorcycle parts. He left the office and walked a few feet to the end of the hallway. Here there was a locked steel door, the top half of which was glass-framed in metal, the kind of glass with thin strands of metal wire running through it. Although it was fairly dark on the other side of the glass, Jesse could make out that it was a mechanic shop. Workbenches, tool cabinets, and metalworking machines were visible along the walls. There were motorcycles in various states of construction, in jigs, and on lifts. Jesse tried the door one last time, to no good end. Then he found an old-fashioned black button doorbell mounted on the side wall. He pressed his finger down on it and held it there. He thought he could just make out the sound of its buzzing somewhere beyond the shop door. It took about 30 seconds, but eventually a door opened at the back wall of the shop, a shaft of light illuminating the shop floor. With the light, Jesse could see that the place was actually pretty comprehensively equipped. There were tire racks against one wall, engines on shelves, along with belts, chains, filters, frames, and all manner of motorcycle parts. Then a big man appeared in silhouette in the doorway at the other end of the shop, his frame blotting out some of the light. He lumbered across the shop floor toward where Jesse was standing. When he got to the half-glass door, Jesse realized that big didn't do the man justice. He was huge, probably 6'6" and thick as an oak tree. He had a mountain man beard that ended at mid-chest. His nose had been rearranged a few times, and he had a mouthful of missing teeth. "Who the fuck are you, and what the fuck do you want?" Jesse couldn't see the gun, but could tell by the way the waistline of the big man's jeans were stretched that he was carrying. He decided to play it friendly instead of tough, remembering that he needed them, and they didn't need him at all. "I'm Jesse," he said, loud enough to be heard through the glass. "I need to speak to Hank and Anya."
Who?
Jesse was willing to take the friendly approach only so far. Cut the crap. Anya and I are friends, and I've met Hank. Anyway, I'm not leaving, and don't go for your piece. That would be a mistake. The big man thought about it, then, as he turned, said, Wait there. 2 minutes later, Hank and Anya appeared at the door, the big man at their backs.
What the fuck do you want?
Hank screamed it with all the venom he could muster. Jesse understood that Hank had to play the tough guy. There are fewer places in the world in which macho behavior is more highly valued than within motorcycle gangs. Not even a sports locker room compared. And Jesse was willing to play his part if it got him what he wanted. I'm sorry, Hank, he said, but I really need to talk with you guys. Please. Hank looked over his shoulder.
It's okay, Nitro. I can handle this guy. You sure? Smells like the law to me, Nitro said. I'm sure.
When Nitro was halfway across the shop floor, Hank opened the door. He and Anya stepped out instead of letting Jesse in, but neither of them was happy to see Jesse. Jesse understood and suggested they talk outside.